Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's program, hosted by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley and the Markela Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University. My name is Kirk Hansen. I am the Executive Director of the Markela Center for Applied Ethics and a member of the Commonwealth Club's Silicon Valley Advisory Board. It's my pleasure to welcome Santa Clara University President Father Paul Locatelli, who will introduce Governor Janet Napolitano of Arizona, our speaker this evening.
It is my pleasure this evening to introduce Governor Janet Napolitano, a Santa Clara University graduate of 1979. She will be our speaker, and the topic will be immigration, where do we go from here? As the 21st governor of Arizona, Governor Napolitano is one of our nation's most innovative and influential political leaders. She recently concluded her first term as the first woman elected to chair the National Governors Association. She was also chosen by Time Magazine as one of America's top five governors. She was first elected as governor of Arizona in 2002 and reelected in 2006. Prior to her election as governor, she served as U.S. Attorney for Arizona and as Arizona's first female attorney general. Governor Napolitano graduated summa cum laude from Santa Clara University, where she majored in political science and was valedictorian. She then attended the University of Virginia Law School. We're deeply proud of her success and deeply grateful for her continuing support of Santa Clara University. It has been said that Governor's hallmark is her common sense. She does what makes sense and what works. But I would also say, from knowing her, that along with common sense, she also has the quality to think critically and creatively and to act justly, hallmarks of Jesuit education. She has brought to her governing approach with great success to many issues. This evening, we're deeply grateful in particular for the opportunity to hear her as she brought this approach to the difficult reality of immigration. It is accurate to say that no state more than the state of Arizona has had to deal head-on with the economic, legal, and moral problems raised by immigration. In the face of such a challenge, Governor Napolitano has become a national leader in addressing illegal immigration. She continues to be a national voice in calling on the federal government to accept its responsibility for immigration and our national borders. As governor, she is responsible for enforcing the new Arizona law requiring all businesses to vouch for the documented status of workers. After the governor speaks, she will take some questions. Please join me in welcoming Governor Napolitano.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to the Commonwealth Club and the Markela Center for Applied Ethics for sponsoring this evening and inviting me to be here. And thank you, Father Locatelli, for that introduction. It's always a pleasure to return to Santa Clara, a place where I learned a lot of things, some in the classroom and some outside. But an education that I hope to put to use on a daily basis. And the topic we have tonight probably capsulizes the phrase applied ethics almost more than anything else in American political life today. And so what I'd like to do is discuss with you some of the issues as a governor surrounding immigration, and I'll do that somewhat briefly and then open it up for your questions. And I know that it being Santa Clara, there will be many. I'm often asked when I say I'm going to speak briefly, you know, Janet, you're a lawyer, you're in politics, define what briefly means to you. And I just will relate a story told to me by Mike Huckabee. Remember Mike Huckabee? Well, Mike told me a story once about a creative writing teacher at Arkansas who said he would give the highest grade to a student who could write the shortest story containing four fundamental elements: religion, royalty, sex, and mystery. And the highest grade went to the following story. Now, oh God, said the queen, I'm pregnant. I don't know who did it. So, with that as our guidepost, let's dive in. You all can use that story too. I think it's good. First of all, one of the things that we need to do when we talk about illegal immigration is really look at the various types of people that that label covers. It covers the person who swims the Rio Grande and sneaks into the country to work. It covers a high school student who was brought here as a child by his or her parents and now is seeking to go to a state university with state-supported tuition. It covers a PhD student who came here on a visa and now wishes to stay. It covers employers of all types, growers in Yuma, in the valleys of California, high-tech companies here in Silicon Valley. Illegal immigration, in other words, it covers the gamut, and you really need to keep that in mind because one of the things that gets lost in the public debate are the individual faces of who is involved, both the immigrant and the person who is hiring them and the reason they seek to be here and they seek to stay. So you have a lot of variety under the label illegal immigrant. And then the debate, as you know, has a very broad continuum. On one side, you have what I call the wall people. We simply build a wall, and we will stop the problem of illegal immigration. Those folks have very loud voices in public life today, in the media and elsewhere, in the Congress of the United States. My response to them has been, show me a 50-foot wall, and I'll show you a 51-foot ladder. But nonetheless, they have a very powerful voice, in part because the image is a very easy one to understand. You don't want any more illegal immigrants? Build a wall. You've solved your problem, right? That's the solution. On the other side, you have those who maintain that really this whole immigration thing is a lark. We should simply open our borders and let people flow back and forth as they wish and not worry ourselves about it. They, too, I think, are wrong. Why? Because immigration and legal immigration really involves who is entitled not only to be in our country but ultimately to earn the privileges of citizenship, and that goes to the heart of our nation's sovereignty. And you have to have an immigration policy, in my view, that works in order to protect those fundamental values as well. So you've got broad ends of the continuum, and here's where the applied part of applied ethics comes in. I think they're both wrong because a wall, as I said, will not keep everyone out. On the other hand, not having a rule of law that applies to immigration, to me, doesn't work either. So somewhere in the middle is where the proper balance needs to be struck. And here, this is where our nation's capital has let us down, because immigration, and the definition of a nation's borders, who's entitled to be a citizen and so forth, that under our system is supposed to be an inherently federal function. And that should be guided out of law from Washington, D.C. But Washington, D.C. over the past years has been incapable of dealing with this topic because of all of the political and other pressures applied there, because it is more complicated than some or many would suggest. And so the answer, what they have done, is nothing, really nothing, which equates to bad law enforcement on the one hand, and on the other hand, for those 12 or 13 million already in the country illegally, really equates to silent amnesty. Because really what it's saying is, let's just keep doing what we've been doing. Everybody wink, wink, and pretend that we don't have 12 or 13 million people in the country illegally, and that, too, will solve the problem. When Washington does nothing on an issue such as immigration, states pay a price. And the state of Arizona has probably paid a higher price than any other state of the country. Let me give you some numbers. Arizona is the site of over half of the Border Patrol apprehensions in the nation. Over half. 2 years ago, that was over 500,000 apprehensions in Arizona. Arizona is a state of 6.4 million people. So you can see that the numbers themselves have a huge impact. We have a large number of illegal immigrants who not only cross into Arizona but stay. And a portion of those, a small percentage, they commit crimes while they are there. And then they get prosecuted in our state courts and incarcerated in our state facilities. Now, under a federal law, the federal government is supposed to pay us for the cost of that incarceration. The law's acronym is SCAT. And it will surprise you to know that the federal government hasn't paid its bill. A couple of years ago, I began, I noticed this. So I said, well, I'll know what I'm going to send a bill to the Attorney General of the United States. So we added it all up, and we typed it up very neatly, invoice, State of Arizona, Attorney General Gonzalez, dear Mr. Gonzalez. And I sent him a bill. At that time, it was about $300 million. I waited 30 days for my check to come. And it didn't, so I waited another 15 days because I'm polite, and then I sent him a revised bill with a late fee on it. And I have now, I keep sending those bills. It's almost $500 million. $500 million. And California, I would venture to say, has number north of that, as do some of the other border states. And so when you've got to pay that, that's money that comes out of our system that we could use to pay teachers and give teachers a pay raise, that we could use to include more people in public health care, that we could use to do more business development and do incentives for young and growing businesses to come into Arizona and bring their jobs there. The pie is not infinite, and when you take $500 million out of the pie to cover a federal cost, Arizonans feel that immediately and deeply. Other costs in my state. Because we have a broken immigration system, we don't allow enough people in legally. It's particularly felt in the agriculture area, where now crops literally are left not being picked or fields are not being planted. This is happening in California. It's happening all over the United States. And that, my friends, ultimately equates into increases in the price of food. In the price of food. There is an agricultural worker visa program. It's called H-2A visas. Fewer than 2% of agricultural workers in the U.S. can get one of those visas. So you have that cost. Here's another cost. Costs for education and health care. I'm not talking about illegal immigrants trying to be leeches on the welfare system. They're not. We don't find them in the welfare system. But their children are entitled to be educated, and indeed under Supreme Court law, They are entitled by the U.S. Constitution to be educated. If they don't have health insurance, like so many other people who don't have health insurance, where do you go to get your health care? You go to an emergency room. So they become part of that huge universe of uncompensated care. Other costs. There's a cost, really, in human dignity when you don't have a workable immigration system. You have the rise of the human smuggling organizations who really now parallel the drug smuggling organizations down in my part of the country. The product is human beings, not drugs, but they literally bring people in. They keep the money separate from the people so that if you arrest the smugglers, you don't get the money or vice versa. They fight over turf. So they increase. We've had a lot of murders in Arizona, and they are really fights between organized human smuggling gangs. Another cost on the human side, deaths in the desert. We have, as a country, taken steps to build barriers across that southwest border, we have shut off easy corridors of illegal entry, what happens is you have more and more people using more and more organized criminal syndicates to do ever more dangerous crossings. And let me tell you this. Crossing from Mexico into Arizona during the summer, when the daily temperature can be higher than 120 degrees, there's no way you can carry enough water to do it. And the tragedy is finding literally bodies by the hundreds in the desert, people trying to cross. And another cost, labor exploitation. When you have an underground economy, the wink-wink that I talked about earlier, you open the door for exploitation of labor. People working and then not getting paid, and the employer saying, well, go report yourself. Sue me. Well, they have no avenue with which to do that. So we have a situation where the borders are broken. The immigration law has become unenforceable in many respects. We need comprehensive reform at the federal level. We're not getting it. That's causing costs to be borne, particularly in a state like Arizona. What needs to happen? Well, I think the following, and it is complicated. It is not easy. But it's important, and it's important that we get to it as a country. First, we need to reform the visa system itself. We don't allow enough people in the country legally. You know, the numbers of visas we allow for individuals, for example, to come in from Mexico are almost the same as those allowed to come in from the Dominican Republic. If you are a Mexican national and you are married and you want to join your spouse in the United States who's already here and you want to get a visa to do it, you have to wait almost 10 years to get a visa. So the visa system itself needs to be adjusted, it needs to be streamlined, and it needs to recognize that immigration is at its root. In the large part, it is a labor issue. It is people coming to work where they think they can make a higher wage. So the visa system needs to be reformed. You do need a functional temporary worker program, not in a way that undercuts the rights of U.S. labor, the wages paid for U.S. labor, but there are aspects of the American economy that really can use immigrant labor, agriculture being one. Quite frankly, tourism is another one, some aspects of the construction industry being a third. To have a temporary worker program where people can work legally in this country for a certain period of time, but they don't give up their home citizenship, nor are they asked to apply for citizenship here or get in that pathway, that is a good kind of adjustment within the world economy in which we live. Third, you've got to deal with the 12 or 13 million who are already in this country. The notion that was popular on the Hill last year is that we will deport them. We will ask them to report. Hi, I'm here illegally. send me home, maybe to a country I've never actually spent any time in. And then I will apply, go to the consular office there and reapply to come back into the United States legally. Report to deport. Really not a good idea. Number of reasons. One is the numbers are just huge. I mean, you're talking about, you know, deporting all of Los Angeles County plus. The administrative machinery to do that, beyond anything else, would be a huge cost with no big gain involved. More than that, who in their right mind would report to be deported and get in line for 10 years for a visa they may not get? So there's no incentive with which to do it. Lastly, it doesn't really deal with the issue of what do you do with the millions who came here legally, stayed, and then had children here. Those children are citizens. Are you going to split up all of those families under the guise of immigration reform as if that will solve the issue? I don't think that's a good idea either. So report to deport, to me, is not a solution. Nor is amnesty, a true amnesty, where you just kind of say, you know what, we don't care, you're here. As long as you're here, we're fine, we're going to leave you alone. You've got to somehow bring these folks out of the shadows and recognize that and then move forward. In my view, what the country needs to do is to have a process set up that provides a process and a requirement that those here illegally register. So we know who they are, and we know where they are, that they pay a fine, that they learn English, that they stay out of the criminal justice system, they pay their taxes, and they get in a queue to earn citizenship. To me, that is not amnesty. I mean, that you're paying a fine. Recognize, for the most part, under federal law, if you cross illegally, that's not a crime. I keep hearing, well, what about illegal? Don't you understand? Well, it's illegal, but it's a civil violation, not criminal. But even so, they ought to have to pay a fine and get in line and so forth. So come out of the shadows, but in such a fashion that there's a joint understanding about what it is they are seeking. It's to become a citizen of the United States. Next, we need more technology at the border. Now, some of you may have read about the virtual fence. This is a contract that was let by the federal government. They were going to build this fence. It's a contract they gave to Boeing. The virtual fence doesn't really work yet. It's still virtual. But the idea underlying it is a good one, and that is to say that through a combination of cameras and ground sensors and radar and all the rest, you can provide greater security at the border without the need to have a Border Patrol agent stationed every 100 yards. So you need to use more technology, and then you need to use more technology at the ports of entry themselves so that people coming through, you have better documents, you have better ways of reading the documents, you use more retina scanners and all the rest, so you really know who's coming in and going out and have a way quickly, expeditiously, cheaply to know who they are and, again, where they are going. That, my friends, is much better than a wall. Next, going along with that, modernizing the border infrastructure as a whole. You know, the ports of the United States, those land ports, are very important entries and exits into the U.S., and their infrastructure is sorely out of date, and that's why you get to these positions where you have to wait 5 or 6 hours to cross at Tijuana sometimes, or Naco sometimes, or other places. There needs to be, as in so many infrastructure issues in the United States, but in particular in this one, you need to modernize those ports. You need to enlarge them, include the technology, budget for it, pay for it, and get it done. And then you need to deal with the demand side of the equation. As I said earlier, the root of this is labor migration. It's people coming to work because there are jobs here, they can make American dollars, send them home, the whole issue of remittances is there. And so dealing with the employers who create that demand in Arizona, I signed a law last year. It's controversial, but here's what the law says. It says if you're an employer and you are found to twice have intentionally and knowingly hired an illegal immigrant, you lose your license to do business in Arizona. You have a number of possible defenses. One is if you use the federal database, the E-Verify database, on a routine basis, or you have an I-19, you have a process to check immigration documents for applicants. That will get around the intent and knowing requirement. That will be a defense. But it is, at the state level, given the federal government's failures, the effort to shut down the demand. And then last, we need to not only deal with the root causes of demand up here, but the root causes of supply in particularly Mexico and Central America. And that, of course, is the lack of work and money there. I mean, I just described, you got to pay money to cross. It's dangerous. It's hot. The jobs over here are not exactly the cream of the crop, a lot of them. Why is it that people continue to come by the thousands every day? Well, in part because they don't have any economic hope for themselves. And so that hope, that kind of investment, that hope, ultimately, is going to be very, very important. I met with President Calderon not too long after he was elected president of Mexico, and we talked about his strategy of putting more investment dollars in the states of northern Mexico. In other words, trying to get people before they get in such a position that they're going to cross illegally in the United States. We wait to see whether that actually will happen. So those are the things that need to occur at the national level. Now, in the meantime, what are states doing? Well, I think Arizona, we've done a lot. We've put a lot of our resources down at the border. We started this when I was Attorney General, but we have gone on a concentrated effort to go after the remittances, the money that's going south, stop that up with a process that are called damning warrants. We put together task forces on illegal immigrant gangs, stolen cars, identity theft. We have a task force with the government of Sonora on methamphetamine, its production and import into the United States. We're working with the federal government on the visa issue. We have volunteered Arizona to be a pilot for H-2A visa reform with the U.S. Secretary of Labor. We passed our own employer sanctions law. The legislature right now is considering some adjustments to that law, but it is now in effect and has withheld all court challenges. So those are the things that Arizona is doing, and a lot of states are following. A lot of states are following. California is doing some things, Colorado, Texas, but also throughout the United States. One of the things I think the presidential candidates have been surprised by is how the illegal immigration issue is not just a border issue. It really is in so many different states. Here are the things that we have to avoid as states, and it is tough. One is we have to avoid disregarding people's civil rights. And the way too easy way to slop over from immigration enforcement to racial profiling. We are really at a very, very tense point in Maricopa County right now on this because our sheriff and our county attorney there, in part because of the public demand for more illegal immigration enforcement, are doing sweeps through neighborhoods. And those have raised a lot of issues about racial profiling and what's going on there. When I return to Phoenix, on my desk this weekend will be a bill just delivered by the legislature asking me to require every law enforcement agency in our state to have a policy to go after illegal immigrants. In other words, converting local law enforcement into INS and Border Patrol adjuncts. Next, I haven't yet decided what to do with that bill, by the way. I mean, I can argue that one both sides. We could talk about it during the Q&A if you wish. It's a very difficult problem. We need to quit passing at the state level requirements to address phantom problems. Requirements, for example, to require document after document after document after document after document to qualify for public benefits to show that you are legally in the country, when in fact the data is overwhelmingly that illegal immigrants are not trying to get social services for free. That is not the problem. And also, they're not trying to vote. All these ID requirements for voting, these are the same people that the Border Patrol somehow can't find. But yet they're voting? I mean, let's be a little consistent here. I don't think so. And then it's so important, and I want to stress this again, we should not take a broken immigration system out on young people who came here or are here of no volition of their own, basically have gone to school here. But all of a sudden, states like Arizona, out of genuine frustration and real frustration by the people there, say, well, no in-state tuition. No in-state tuition if you're not here legally. And things of that sort. So those are the things that states need to avoid. But it is very, very tough and will remain very, very tough unless and until Washington, D.C. moves. So those are some of the things, the do's and the don'ts, that we need to be concerned about. Let me just close with this. There are lots of ways to demagogue the immigration debate, and it's been done pretty successfully. I was on the Hill a lot last spring working with the Senate trying to get a comprehensive bill through. And what was fascinating to see was there was an announcement by Senator Reid and about a dozen senators, bipartisan, that they had reached a compromise on immigration reform. And then they let the senators go home for the weekend. And by the time they got back, the political will had dissolved. Why? Because the media attention was so harsh. And I talked to several senators who said they'd been on the Hill decades and had never seen the kind of public outcry they saw when they announced that they were doing immigration reform. And so the politics are really, really tough. And what does that mean for us? What it means is there's going to be one, I think, window of opportunity. This next year, we're going to elect a new president of the United States. And I can say, knowing Senator McCain and where he has been on this issue, he is from Arizona, understands the dynamics. Senator Clinton, Senator Obama, they all, when you actually get right to it, are not that dissimilar, and they all recognize the need here. There will be an opportunity in the next few years at the federal level to finally have an immigration debate that is more than a bumper sticker, and to finally take on the topic of comprehensive reform in a way different than we were able to do last year. And while that is happening, the states will continue to serve as, like Arizona, as a laboratory of democracy. And maybe, to put the silver lining here, the lessons we are learning now are lessons that can be applied for the entire country moving forward. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Governor Janet Napolitano of Arizona. I again am Kirk Hansen. I'll be asking your questions of the governor during the next few minutes, and we do have a few minutes for question and answer. There were several questions that dealt with how you would explain as a politician and as an American the anti-immigrant rhetoric that has dominated the discussion of immigration policy over the last few years. Is it economics? Is it a nativist sentiment of we don't want them in our country? What do you attribute it to?
Yes. some of each, but it depends. And it is not without precedent in our nation's history. If you go back to the mid-1800s, you had the development of a political party in this country that were called the Know-Nothings, and one of the primary issues in their platform was anti-immigrant. I think it was German immigration at the time. At the end of the 1800s, the early 1900s, you had the great waves of Italian-Irish immigration. You had the immigration of members of the Jewish faith who were coming into the country. So you have had these waves before, and they have met with similar debates. And what seems to happen, is that we kind of go along, and then the numbers begin going up, and we don't deal with it very well, and it festers and it festers, and the public gets really mad. And I think one of the sources of that is the public wants to know that there's a law that's being enforced firmly and fairly. And when they think the rule of law is not being applied or there is no rule of law, they get frustrated and angry. And if you're working and you're out of work, an illegal immigrant becomes a great scapegoat. If your kid is in a classroom and there are 40 kids, that's an illegal immigration issue. If you're driving around L.A. or Phoenix or someplace and you're listening to Spanish language radio and looking at advertisements and whatever, you're saying they don't want to become Americans because they don't want to learn our language, and all those things feed into each other. But I think one of the root causes is we don't adjust our immigration law over time. We do a big reform. The last big one here in our country was 86, and then nothing happens in between, and the problem grows and festers.
And a related question is, can you as a governor or other politicians make the case for the benefits of immigration for American society? Do you believe that immigration on net benefits American society? And as a politician, can you afford to make that case in the current political environment?
Sure. I mean, first of all, we remind people that we are a nation of immigrants. We are also a nation of laws. That's the cliche, but we are a nation of immigrants. And where illegal immigration is concerned, there's a lot of studies being done now about what is the economic impact, and some of them are discounted because of the source of the study, so they don't kind of ring with objectivity. But I think it's fair to say, on the data that I have seen, that, for example, illegal immigrants pay more into the Social Security system than they take out, that they are net donors to the Social Security system. I think it is fair to say that without illegal immigrant labor, we would right now be experiencing, in certain areas of the country, in certain sectors of the economy, a true labor shortage, which is why the whole visa system needs to be refined and reformed to recognize that reality. So I can make that argument, and I have politically. When I ran for re-election in 2006, my opponent, because I wouldn't, you know, kind of just blast all illegal immigration and try to discuss this as a more complicated issue than some would wish. Well, I got attacked. You know, the attack was, you're soft on illegal immigration. You are soft on illegal immigration. How can you be the governor of Arizona? Mm. And here's what I did. I went around Arizona, and I you do a couple of speeches a day, and I would take a poll. I'm going to take the same poll right now, just about. I'm going to say, how many of you all are in favor of illegal immigration? Raise your hand. And you know what? I have a consensus. All right. Nobody's in favor of illegal immigration. Now let's work our way through what we're going to do about it and what makes sense. And what I found in Arizona, which is the epicenter of this whole area, this whole issue, is that there really was a broad consensus. People understood that the report to deport idea was nonsense. People understood that a wall is not a solution. People understood that you got to do something with those who are already in the country. Many Arizonans come into daily contact with those they know are in the country illegally. So they get that. What they're looking for is a solution that gets us out of this morass, this quagmire. And in the meantime, they're really mad at really absorbing all these costs that have been foisted on the states because of the federal government's failure to act. They're legitimately mad about that. And I think one of the things I recognize is they are the legitimacy of their anger and their frustration. They're entitled to be angry and frustrated. What we have to do now is work to a better space, a better place. And by the way, I was accused of being soft on illegal immigration. I saw the ads, the TV, whatever, and I carried every county and every legislative district in the state, so there.
For our radio audience, we're talking with Governor Janet Napolitano of Arizona. The next question relates to what you expect from the political campaign this year. Do you expect any of the three candidates currently in the running for president to endorse a comprehensive solution and to fight for it?
Yes. In fact, I think that basically, in a way, they all have. And if you go, I know both to Senator Obama and Senator Clinton on their websites, they have laid out immigration policies. Senator McCain is interesting because he, of course, was an early, it was the McCain-Kennedy or Kennedy-McCain bill, which was the kind of the core piece of legislation that the Senate was working from this spring. Now, he got beat up pretty badly in his primary process on the immigration side for being soft. And so in response, he has changed. So we need to do enforcement first and secure the border first. And then we can look at some of these other issues. That's a very attractive position to say. We'll deal with the immigration issues once we have total security at the border, and we kick all the illegals out. The problem is that in a way you have to be working on both simultaneously, because until you deal with the visa issues, until you deal with really the recognition that for labor purposes, there needs to be a better flow. And I'm talking particularly now because in my head is the Southwest border, but let me not ignore the whole issue of high tech and the H-1B issues that are really infecting this valley, for example, not being able to get enough people or keep people who get their higher educations here and keep those talents and those brains in our country the way we used to do. And those need to be worked on simultaneously to improving the ports and the technology and the manpower that is down at the border. Let me also say this. You can put a lot of billions of dollars of security at the border. And my experience, I was the U.S. attorney. You know, I supervised the prosecution of over 6,000 illegal immigrant felonies. And that doesn't even include the drug crimes and the money laundering crimes and the other crimes. I was the attorney general. I was attorney general at a time when the federal government put Operation Gatekeeper in San Diego, where they put a bunch of stuff down there, and they did Operation Hold the Line in El Paso, where they basically stationed a Border Patrol agent every 100 yards, and then they forgot to do anything in Arizona. And what happened? That's why we're the source of over half the illegal immigration in the country. It was a big old funnel. And I'll tell you this, you can do a lot more in Arizona now, and it is better now than it was a year and a half ago. Still a lot of work to do, but it's better now than it was. You will never totally stop all illegal immigration. So let's be realistic about our expectation. We need to stop as much as possible, and we need to incentivize legal immigration so we know who's coming in, how long they're entitled to stay, where they're going, and all the rest. But to say you're not going to do anything on the labor side until you have 100% shut off the Southwest border is, I hope, is not used as a excuse for never actually getting to the other side of immigration.
We have a number of questions about the plight of a state vis-a-vis the federal government. Let me ask it this way. You have taken on the federal government by billing them $500 million. What about going the other direction to your local constituencies, your local jurisdictions? A number of people asked about how you feel about Sheriff Joe, who has been enforcing the immigration laws very carefully and very thoroughly and has been accused of racial profiling. Do you, as the governor, have any responsibility for reconciling the outliers of this immigration enforcement within the state?
Well, it is that is a very tough issue right now, as you might imagine, in Arizona. I think the Sheriff Joe, this is the sheriff of Maricopa County. Maricopa County is where Phoenix is, and almost two-thirds of the population of our state lives in that county. So it's the biggest county by far, and the source of a lot of discontent about the amount of illegal immigration. And I think in response to that, the sheriff, who is an elected public official in his own right, has cross-trained with the federal government under an agreement. They're called 287G agreements with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He's now cross-trained, I think, about 150, 160 of his deputies to do immigration law enforcement. And what they've been doing over the last couple of months is going into areas of the county where it is suspected there are large numbers of illegal immigrants and doing what they call crime suppression. And arresting people for a whole host of crimes, but as they do that, also doing an immigration operation simultaneously. And that has, as you might imagine, raised a lot of concern amongst Arizonans. We are working through that right now. I wish I had an easy answer on this platform right now to say what does a governor do about that. I can tell you what I've done with my state police department. We have also cross-trained officers under 287G. We only work in a task force situation. We're focused on the traffickers, the smugglers, the damning warrants for the money launderers, and the like. I've also cross-trained a group of corrections department officers so that as inmates begin the exit process from serving their sentence in the state prison, rather than releasing them into the street, so that then we wait to see whether ICE picks them up, they are released immediately, and we've already done the pre-deportation work. So as they are released, they go right over to federal custody to be deported from the United States. To me, that is a good way to manage or to have a effective state law enforcement presence. The lack of federal resources is such that not just the sheriff, but a number of police departments out there in Arizona want to do their own immigration enforcement. How we govern that, how we police it, how we make sure it doesn't slop over into racial profiling, we're still at the infancy of thinking through.
There's two questions that call to mind the difference between Arizona and some other states, saying that you share some characteristics, obviously, with Texas and New Mexico and California, but not with North Dakota and Montana and so on. Do the governors from the various states find common cause in this, and do you get any support from the governor of North Dakota?
Well, we're all worried about those Canadians coming over. Really? Got a big headache there. And actually, from a from a Homeland Security terrorism perspective, the northern border has been more problematic than the southern border in terms of where actual terrorists have come through. It hasn't been through Mexico. It's been from other places. And in fact, most of them came through legally, and they were overstays, and they overstayed their visas. I really haven't talked about this with the governor of North Dakota, but the four governors on the southwest border, Schwarzenegger, myself, Richardson, and Perry, we belong to a group with the six governors of the northern states of Mexico. And we talk, and our staffs talk regularly. We all, 10 of us, meet once a year. In fact, this year we alternate between Mexico and California. I mean, Mexico and the U.S. This year we're going to meet in L.A. To talk about immigration issues and also how you keep those border communities safe. Because when you have the rise of all these criminal syndicates or whatever with drugs and illegal immigration, you have a real safety and security issue with your border communities. And those folks are entitled to live in a safe environment. So Yes, we do work together. The most recent thing we did is Schwarzenegger and I and Richardson jointly sent a letter asking the federal government not to withdraw the National Guard from the border right now. It's something called Operation Jumpstart. It started a while ago. It actually has had a very beneficial impact down there in terms of the overall safety at the border. It was originally scheduled to terminate this July, but as I mentioned, the virtual fence doesn't work. They haven't been able to hire enough Border Patrol. You know, it's the federal government. It takes a long time to get anything done. So we think they need to keep the National Guard there longer.
We're talking with Governor Napolitano of Arizona. Next question has to do with the employer sanction law. And what do you think has been its effect? There have been reports of communities emptying out. That's too strong. But there have been reports of communities where that are losing population and employers who are finding it harder to find workers. What do you think will be the impact of the law on Arizona?
I think it's too soon to tell. There actually have not been any enforcement actions under the law. There were a lot of predictions by some, the sky is falling, but those haven't come to pass. A lot more employers have signed up to use the E-Verify system as a result of the law. The economy in Arizona is not good right now, but it's hard to attribute that to this law when you look at Nevada and California and Florida, other states that have similar types of economies and similar types of numbers right now. So it's hard to attribute causality to the employer sanctions law. We've got a number of groups that are analyzing it, but I think we're going to have to do that over time to see what happens. In the meantime, a number of other states either have adopted similar laws or are in the process of doing that. Tennessee, Oklahoma, Colorado would be three examples.
This question relates to the reports at the time that you were asked to sign the employer sanctions law about whether you really believed in it. And it asks whether there's a dilemma for politicians around realism and that you sometimes have to be realistic and sign things that you don't fully agree with.
Well, the answer is yes. As a governor, you often sign things you don't fully agree with. The question is, do you disagree enough that you actually will the veto pen? Now, I have vetoed. I'll just tell you, I'm a Democrat, and you can clap for that if you want. That's all. But my legislature, both houses, are Republican, I have vetoed, I've used the veto pen 160 some odd times since I've been governor. It's actually a stamp. And it's a self-inking stamp, so you can use it a lot. And I've never been overridden on a veto. Never been overridden. In fact, they've only tried to override me once or twice. So I'm not shy about using the veto stamp, but you can't use it just because you don't think something is perfect, or you wouldn't have written something a particular way. It really has to be used very carefully and judiciously under our system. I really didn't even think seriously about vetoing the employer sanctions law because when I ran for governor, even my first time I was being asked about immigration, I had identified dealing with the demand side of this as an important part of an overall approach, that you couldn't just talk about building walls, that you had to deal with employers who consistently, intentionally, and knowingly go into that market, fueling that demand. And also, in so doing, creating unfair competition between themselves and other businesses that are hiring legally, either paying higher wages or having a process by which they get legal immigrants and the like. So I had said from the outset that a decent employer sanctions law I would sign.
There's another concern about the position you're in right now, which is that there are immigrant children and youth being separated from their parents who are being deported under the current enforcement system. Do you feel, you stated in your talk, that you believe that this needed to be dealt with and that this separation was a bad thing? Is there anything you can do or you feel you should be doing to try to keep families together at the current time, given the current situation?
There's not a lot I can do. Under the federal law, if you get the parent and they're deportable, they're to be deported. But I think that's why it's so important to articulate what the real impacts of this are on real people and how this works. Last year, the ICE, which is the federal agency, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they did a series of employer raids in Massachusetts. And they went in and they got the parents during the workday, and they hadn't done any pre-planning. Well, what do you do with the kid? The kids were in school, and their parents were being picked up and getting ready to be deported. Well, what do you do with all those children? Now, of course, now they learned from that, I think, a little bit. But now they do pre-planning with, the local child welfare agency to take the kids. Well, again, that is just a symptom of the greater underlying problem when you have a broken immigration system. And are we really safer and more secure when our law enforcement resources are spent on that as opposed to something else? I think the answer to that is probably not. But it's going to continue to happen. And it will happen within the states, too, until there's a federal reform.
We're talking with Governor Napolitano of Arizona. This question has to do with Mexico. What's the one thing you would ask of President Calderon today to help make Arizona's situation better?
Two things. And I want to mention that we talked a little bit about my work with the other governors on the U.S. side of the border. Probably the governor I have the closest day-in, day-out relationship with is the governor of Sonora, Mexico, which is the state that borders us on the south. And his and my staff regularly working that border, trying to do things together to make that region safer, because he's as frustrated by illegal immigration in a way as I am, because what you have are folks coming in from Central America or the poorer states of Mexico, which tend to be in the southern part of Mexico, flooding into Sonora, waiting, paying the coyote pollero, whatever you want to call them, waiting there with all the attendant problems that causes until they can sneak across the border into Arizona. So he's got we share some of those same issues. So for President Calderon, two things. One is to really maintain his commitment to move federal law enforcement resources in Mexico to the northern part of the country to deal with the trafficking organizations. And there's a real violent crime issue about this as well, a serious, serious violent crime issue that needs to be addressed. And the second is to do as he is committed and is trying to do, is to work to bring investment and capital investment dollars into the states of Mexico that need the jobs the most.
We are on the college campus, Santa Clara University, and unfortunately we have run out of time, and there are lots of wonderful questions, but let me ask one relevant to the campus. You as a graduate of Santa Clara, there are two or three questions which want to know how you get from Swig Hall to the governor's office.
I went from Swig to Campisi. All I'll say to that is I got a wonderful education here. I got exposed to a lot of different things and ideas that, as a kid growing up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, going to public school there, I had no idea about. And that is, after all, I think one of the purposes of a higher education and the focus on critical thinking and analysis that is an integral part, I think, of a Jesuit education is, I hope, even in the maelstrom of politics and all the back and forth that goes along with that, it is at times a full-body contact sport. But I hope that education is something that, and I know that it is something that I can use on a regular basis.
When you were sitting here as a senior, did you have in mind that you would enter politics?
I had in mind I'd enter public service, politics, running for office. I thought, maybe someday, if you'd asked me whether I'd be the governor of Arizona, I would have said, I've only been there to go to the Grand Canyon. I don't even know where it is. So that I would not have been able to answer.
We can thank Governor.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this evening's program, brought to you by the Markkula Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University and the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. Again, we'd like to thank Governor Janet Napolitano of Arizona, Santa Clara President Paul Locatelli, our audience here at Santa Clara University, and those who are listening and joining us on the radio. And now this meeting is adjourned.